Tom, unique situation, of course, in Montreal. They don't have their head coach, so I think it's a small change, but the assistants and the head coach at this point are pretty much on the same page.
Absolutely, and the game plan is probably well ingrained in the team's mind. They have to look no further than what they did in Vegas in Game 2, Gregs, and yeah, you want that leader pushing you, the guy behind the bench that everyone kind of, you know, has that respect for and is the voice among the group. But here's a chance for them to rally behind the absence of Dominic Ducharme, if you will. The old get one for the Gipper and win it for the coach while he's away kind of thing. And we'll see how the group executes. They should be pumped up. They played an excellent game the other night. They deserved that win. They deserved the split coming back home. They're going to have a few more fans at the Bell Center, which is tremendous. I know it's a huge, beautiful, cavernous cathedral of hockey, and the 3,500 people there are going to be louder. They're going to, you know, try to double up the sound of a regular 3,500-person crowd. And so this is a good spot for the Habs. It'll be tough without their coach, certainly, but I think that they can rally indeed. And the blueprint's there for success. Like you mentioned, no Chandler Stephenson. That's a loss. It's a good forward for the Vegas Golden Knights that has a good track record and experience in the playoffs. So here's another opportunity for the Habs to maybe stun the Golden Knights, take advantage of them while they're missing not a huge part of their team, but an integral one, if you will. So the momentum potentially could be built up a little bit more for the Montreal Canadiens if they get another performance like they had the other night.
Well, when they score first, they are deadly, similar to the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are now 2-1 series leaders over the New York Islanders. And the thing I watched that game last night with Tampa Bay is they look ridiculously comfortable playing with a one-goal lead. Like in the third period, it's 2-1, you know, point score is a late goal. You watch the first, they didn't have a shot on basically the first 9 minutes of the third, but it wasn't like the Islanders were dominating. It was like Tampa was like, okay, here you go. You know what? We're not going to rush. We're not going to make a major mistake. And they weren't necessarily sitting back, but they weren't attacking either. They're just kind of in that comfort zone of knowing how to play with a lead.
Yeah. That's almost like championship pedigree. You know, when we hear that term, the perennial favorites, the teams that are always in the big dance, Tampa's kind of got that now. And I think that game yesterday is a sign of it. They didn't give the Islanders much. The goal that the Islanders scored, that was an odd bounce. You're going to take your breaks any way you can get them, certainly. But you're right. Like, there was no panic. There was urgency in Tampa's game, but no panic. They went into a hostile environment at Nassau, the last hurrah at the Coliseum. You know the Isles fans were pumped up, and they managed to weather that storm, and they managed to quiet down the crowd. And, you know, it wasn't really anything that the Islanders didn't do or weren't able to accomplish. They played a good game, but you got a team like Tampa that has the experience, the know-how to win in different ways, and they put that plan into execution. That is a solid road effort. It kind of reminds me, Gregs, of this time I was interviewing Glenn Anderson, and he talked about the 87-88 Oilers. And he said, even though that team doesn't get the attention and clout that maybe the 85 team did, the centennial greatest team, and the 83-84 powerhouse offensive team the Oilers had, he said the 87-88 team was the best of the championship teams that the Oilers had. And I said, well, what are you talking about? I mean, look at all the records you guys broke individually and as a team the years prior. And he goes, yeah, that didn't matter. And that was great that we accomplished that. But we had learned and discovered the way to win. And nothing that was thrown at us ever fazed us. And maybe this is kind of an element of that we're seeing with the Lightning right now. And that's dangerous if you're the other three teams left in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Looking at Vegas tonight, without Chandler Stephenson, I asked the question, is this the worst conference final center ice group we've ever seen? Because, like, honestly, like, their centers weren't great to start with. Alex Tuck is now moving to center. He's not really a center. Carlson, yep. Nicholas Roy, and Keegan Kolesar. Like, no offense to any of these players, but that might be the weakest group of centers I've ever seen in a conference final.
valid, first of all, very true. I mean, the Habs young centers, although they have a lot of pedigree and a lot of upside, they're young, they're raw, they're learning. And then you do look at the Golden Knights, and I was looking at their roster today, this morning, and I'm like, geez, like, yeah, William Karlsson, he's pretty darn good, but outside of that, like you said, Keegan Kolesar is another one, Chandler, like Nick Hague, Nick Waugh, those guys, it's like, this is the opposite of what we're used to, where we recognize and appreciate good forward units built on the backbone of really strong centermen. And the Golden Knights are the opposite of that. They're a forward unit built from the outside in, from the wings into center. So to say that maybe this is one of the weakest center ice matchups in conference finals, semifinals history, completely valid. And in a way, you could say it's a shot towards the Golden Knights. Okay, understandable. But at the same time, maybe it's a feather in their cap that they have such good wingers that it glosses over the perceived weakness down the middle. So your statement about it being a rough one when it comes to center icemen, absolutely true. But at the same time, you go, geez, okay, Golden Knights make up for it with really strong wing play, tremendous defenseman, and an excellent 1-2 punch between the pipes, that you almost forget that down the middle, that is not a sexy-looking lineup.
Tom Cazzola joins us on Edmonton Sports Theater, TSN 1260. And, Tommy, I know that you'll be golfing this weekend, trying to break 90 for the first time this year. So that'll be nice. But the U.S. Open, of course, is ongoing right now. Richard Bland is now he had himself a pretty good round. It's funny, like, he's 500 now. Lots of guys, you know, there's still lots of guys to go and have to tee off and everything like that, but it is kind of interesting, more so to see some of the players who have who've maybe played themselves out of contention. Like you know, I want to see what Adam Hadwin, you know, he had a really good day yesterday and he's had a decent start today, right? Like DeChambeau's, you know, he's minus two through two, and which is set himself up, I think, decently for the weekend. But it's kind of interesting to see some of the players who we know are probably already out for the weekend. And I just, like, you know, Sergio, I don't think he's getting in, you know, and, you know, a few other guys like that. You know, Corey Connors, he's going to have a great bounce-back day today. Yep. For him to get in after a tough plus four yesterday.
And that Torrey Pines, it's amazing. Like, these guys shred these amazing, phenomenal golf courses every weekend, and then Torrey Pines kind of beats them up. And every now and then, it's refreshing to see that, kind of for the hacks like me trying to break 90. Thank you very much, Griggs. Appreciate that dig. But some of the biggest names, like Phil, didn't have a great first round. He got caught up in getting mad at the gallery for people not turning their phones on silent when they were taking photos. So it's stuff like that where, first of all, the frustration of the course gets to them. Secondly, they got the outside influences that are bothering them. And these are some of the best golfers in the world. Throw in that yesterday there was a 90-minute delay, and it gets in some guys' heads. As good as they are, it leads to some rough scores for them. And you're right, we're going to see some big names out of it, maybe some lesser-known guys sneak their way up, but there's some big names in the mix, too. Obviously, Oosthuizen is in the mix. It would be nice to see Hadwin to make a run here. He had a good first round, like you said. Kepka's in there, and DeChambeau, and those two are jawing at each other again, which is tremendous to see. But every now and then, I like and take in and enjoy and embrace when the course takes it out on the world's best. Kind of refreshing to see. Reminds me of what I'm about to do this weekend on the course and just absolutely hack it up. And hopefully I do break 90, Greg. So thanks for reopening that wound.
Yeah, well, you know, get your head on straight. Try to get in the game a little bit. Mental toughness. It's the key for golf. Mental toughness. If you don't have it, you'll be on the wayside very quickly. Very quickly. A few other notes. you know, we're still getting lots of feedback on the, you know, trade proposals. People, and hey, I love the fans that are passionate about it, but a trade proposal doesn't mean it's 100% going to happen. So some people need to calm down about the Barron Patrick one. Like, calm down. It's a, you know, it's one proposal. You can agree or disagree with it, but it doesn't. And like, the other thing I want to ask is all these people are like, well, what about perceptions of players? Well, here's the thing. NHL general managers and their own scouts and their own assistant GMs are going to value players different. There's no set rule on what you have to give up or get to land a certain player. It just isn't. We've seen teams make trades. The Edmonton Oilers have made some trades that are like, what? You did what? And we've seen other teams do it. So I think the biggest mistake is to try to suggest, like, the only kind of thing that's set in stone, it seems, is that the NFL draft, when you want to trade up for certain picks or whatever, you kind of got to give this or that. But other than that, any trade at any time is all depending on the two people who want to make it.
And that's a good point. I mean, I saw the fallout, and I'm sure because you want to do more of those exercises and trades and potential trades, and they're fun. And scouts and the scouting staffs, they identify some elements of certain players around the league or in junior or college that they see could bring value to that specific team, style of play, a certain element of a player's game, whatever. They have this, and they recognize that, and to them they value it. So that's what they're going off of. And, you know, we as media or as fans of the games, we generally see something. We've got the 30,000-foot view, and for the most part, we all kind of think of things generally the same, but you don't know some of the outliers and the ins and outs that are going on with some of these players and how a team wants to go about shaping its roster and all that. So these are hypotheticals. It's a fun exercise. We're in the middle of the summer. It doesn't mean that the Oilers GM, Kenny Holland, or the Brass are looking at Gregor Rashog, Halle, Gazzola, and Strudwick and going, boy, we got to make this deal. But it makes for some good fodder, and we shouldn't read too much into what we're throwing about. But, hey, every now and then, maybe we actually strike gold and land one of these deals. But to me, it's just part of the fun.
Hey, speak for yourself. I sent my trade request right to the GM to see what he had to say about it.
You would.
So we'll see what happens now. As if. Well, I could be like, are you wasting my time? Yeah. No. Wouldn't do it. But it is funny. I do. You know, as we get closer, we get into, here we are, the expansion draft. It's basically less than 4 weeks away from when they have to submit it. Right, July 17th is when you have to submit your list to the league, and then it kind of rosters are frozen for those 4 days, and then Vegas has some time to talk to free agents, and then they make the draft on the 21st. Then we have the NHL draft on the 23rd and 4th, and then free agency on the 28th. Like, this is going to be one of the greatest Julys ever, but the thing I love most about it is no Canada Day free agency, and I would love for that to be a new trend moving forward, because I'm sorry, but I don't like free agency on Canada Day. Don't like it at all.
I'm 100% behind you, and I know our listeners are probably like, oh, come on, you guys, relax. But it is a buzzkill. That's supposed to be a fun day for everyone. And you were there with me. We were stuck at the rink, waiting around, twiddling our thumbs, looking at the beautiful weather, being like, we need to be outside with our friends and family. But if Canada Day is no longer free agent frenzy, sign me up. Where do I put my name on the petition, Greg? Because I like this kind of staggered, delayed draft situation, free agency situation. To me, it's A-okay, and hopefully it's ongoing.
Tommy, have yourself a great weekend. Good luck getting under 90, and we'll hit an update on Monday.
Sounds good, Greg. Have a great weekend.